Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
What is good, everybody? Welcome one and all to TGI Football here on the SB Nation NFL show sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you will hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. You can listen to TGI Football as well as Monday Football Monday and everything we do here on the SB Nation NFL show by subscribing. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Apple devices, Spotify, etc., etc. You can also watch us live if that is more your cup of tea. On the SB Nation NFL YouTube channel, wherever you are, like, subscribe, basically do anything and everything within your power, because if you don't, we're going to be pretty upset about it. I say we. Normally we are a tripod, but today we're just kind of leaning one direction because Brandon Lee Gowden is out. My name is RJ Ochoa from Blog on the Boys. His name is Steven Serta from Arrowhead Pride. Steven, what up?
What's happening? This is the part of the year where, like, I feel like everybody's just cranking out ridiculous mock drafts, and we're just desperate for like any kind of thing to happen before the NFL draft. But we're all just kind of sitting around and like twirling our thumbs or whatever, because there's really nothing going on in the NFL.
Well, I mean, if you cover the Dallas Cowboys, you're pretty used to that this time of year. I know that, you know, everybody else gets to live like the wealthy and like kings and queens. But we have been in this impoverished land for a very long time since the season ended. So we got Jerry's all in comments. And then ever since then, it's been just dissecting two different words a number of different ways. So I don't feel sorry for you whatsoever, Steven. But it has been a bit of a slow week. We're both kind of off to a slow start on the show. In fact, we found out really right before we started that Brandon couldn't make it. I don't want to out him in where he is, because I partly don't want to dox him. But and it wasn't his fault, to be fair, what with the rescheduling and whatnot. But I did want to say, Steven, happy post-opening day. Opening day was yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not a baseball person, so I did not watch a second of the Royals, but I did see that they lost, because everybody has like high hopes for the Royals, and I feel like this is how they play things every year. Like, I feel like they lose on opening day every single season.
I know you're not a baseball person, and I also know that Arrowhead Pride was tuned in because Andy Reid threw the opening pitch, but I did want to get you on the record since we're right here. I want you to claim a baseball team. Because and if it's the Royals, I think that's a little bit boring, but whatever. My Astros very notably defeated Brandon's Phillies in the World Series 2 years ago. So you never know what, you know, planting a baseball flag can ultimately lead to. So are you going to go Royals, or are you going to be interesting?
I think I'm going to go Padres, because I went to a Padres game last summer when I was in San Diego, and I bought a Padres hat because I just saw a hat and I was like, oh, that's an awesome hat. And so I bought it and I wear it around, but I don't watch Padres games or anything.
That is, I feel like a very common way that people become fans of teams. So like not just baseball, but obviously baseball caps are like the thing. So that's actually a really good reason. I support this. I know we talked about this off air, and if it isn't obvious, I'm vamping because there isn't a lot to talk about. But that being said, what game did you go to? Because I was in San Diego last summer too, and it took us a long time to realize that we both went there in the same summer.
Yeah, I think I went a little bit before you. I think you went like right after me. So I want to say maybe they're playing like the Nationals or something. I don't even really remember who they were playing, because I mean, I wasn't paying close attention to the game. And in fact, I think we had texted some friends here back in Kansas City to like put in bets for us on the game, so we would have something to care about.
What month was this that you went?
I think I went in June, maybe.
In June. Okay, I'm cross-referencing here. Give me a second. So I'm looking at my photos on my phone. The game I went to was on July the 9th, and I saw them play the Mets. So you saw them play the Nationals in June. They hosted. Did they win or lose? Do you remember?
I think they lost.
So they had a three-game series against the Nationals starting Friday, June 23rd. That sound right? Those dates?
Yeah, that sounds right.
So that Saturday, they lost 2-0. Did they not score any runs? Were you that unlucky?
That I don't recall.
They lost. Was it daytime or evening? How about that?
It was a daytime game for sure.
I'm going to assume it was Sunday, and they lost 8-3, and this game began at 1:10 local. So, all right. The day in question, in case you're curious, because I did all this work now, was June 25th. So there you go. Wow. So the Padres, congrats.
Yeah. So maybe somebody's got to, if you want to go back and try to find us at that game, I guess.
Wow. Well, even though a lot of people think that the NFL still has a flag itself in San Diego, they do not. People make that mistake a lot in my experience, but as somebody who covers a team in the AFC West, do people make that mistake in your experience?
I don't think so.
They don't refer to the Chargers as San Diego? I feel like that would happen a lot.
So. No, I feel like everybody got pretty good at it. Like, it was just a quick turn, because I feel like nobody cared. Mm-hmm. Like, even when they moved to LA, it was just like, whatever. Like, it's just the Chargers, who cares?
Wow. Okay. Well, on the subject, not of the Chargers, but of the Chiefs, we're going to go through rules changes that happened as a result of the owners' meetings early in the week. But I wanted to ask you, and then you brought it up in the pre-show. I don't want to call it, we do a meeting. It's not that professional. But the pre-show, jibber jabber. This L'Jarius Sneed thing. So I actually saw a tweet from Pete, and he quoted an Ian Rappaport tweet and said that this was first reported 6 days ago. It was never confirmed by either team, the Titans, who they're trading him to, and that are presumably giving him the big contract, and the Chiefs, who are trading him away. Is there some tinfoil hat stuff going on in the kingdom where they think this isn't going to go through after all?
I think it's going to go through. Like, I don't think there's a chance that this thing doesn't happen, but it is weird that it's been a week and it still hasn't been made official. And maybe it's just the off season. I don't know where L'Jarius Sneed's at right now. I don't know. Maybe he's out somewhere or out of the country on vacation or something like that. I don't know. But I think the holdup here is maybe like contract related, like, because we got that was also weird too, in the way that like the contract was reported, because I think Jordan Schultz put numbers out there like the night that the trade went down. Mm-hmm. And then all of the other newsbreakers like didn't put anything out on the contract. And then like 5 days later, I think Ian Rappaport like shared numbers on the contract. But the fact that this still hasn't all been made official is just weird. Like, it's weird that there hasn't been like confirmation of him passing his physical, signing the contract, and then that being made official like on the NFL transaction wire. But I still think the deal is done. I don't know if it's like contract incentives or something that's holding this thing up. And the big question mark with Sneed too is like his medicals, because he's got a knee that has been a problem for 2 years straight now. Like, it's not something that has caused him to miss a bunch of time, but it's something that like kept him on the injury report for two straight seasons, like knee inflammation. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was one of the biggest things with trade partners, and why it kind of took the Chiefs so long to move him, is because teams were saying like, that's a red flag. Like, we don't know how we feel about that knee, even though he's only 27 years old and coming off an incredible season.
It would be the funniest thing of all time if this fell apart and Sneed just returned to the Chiefs.
I'd be fine with it. I wanted Sneed to stay. I wanted them to run it back one more year with that secondary.
So this is a weird question. I've kind of asked it before. Sneed, I don't fault him at all for wanting to get paid. I mean, you just never know if he'll have that same earning power and same leverage contractually, and so it makes sense for him and his individual future and family to do what he can. But who is the club of people that have missed out, like the club of Chiefs that have either chased the bag or whatever, that have missed out on this run that could have been a part of the eventual statue that will feature Mahomes, Kelsey, Chris Jones, and Andy Reid?
like guys that didn't win rings or guys that like won rings but are just like kind of forgotten?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, you know, I would say that, like, you know, what was the season that the Patriots had Darrell Revis and was it Brandon Browner? Was that,
yeah,
I think that was 14. I think that was the Malcolm Butler win. So like you just think about, I wonder if they're ever like, wow, if we had stuck around, and I don't know if they would have, you know, their play would have kept up that level, but like they could have won two more, you know what I'm saying? And so I wonder, like, is there a guy on the Chiefs that left after the first one that a lot of people thought like, okay, he got the ring and now he's out and is probably kicking himself a little bit?
I mean, I think Tyreek Hill is too big for that.
That's probably the best answer though.
I mean, but he only got the one ring. And
right.
So it's like, and he wanted to get paid too, and that was the whole thing. And now he's the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, but he's stuck in Miami, and Miami is kind of in cap hell right now, mm-hmm. even though they've been making moves and stuff this offseason. So it's like he traded to get $30 million a year. He traded winning rings to go chase that money. And Snead, especially because Tyreek had already gotten paid, like, mm-hmm. because of his past, like off the field issues, right. and things like that. Like when he signed his first extension with the Chiefs, it was kind of less than everybody anticipated it being. And it was only like a 3-year deal because he had so many issues off the field at the time. Which, I mean, he still obviously like has some problems right now that he seems to be dealing with. But Snead in particular was a 4th-round pick who they developed into an elite playmaker in their secondary. And so I don't fault him for wanting to get paid. I'm happy that he is one of the higher paid cornerbacks in the NFL now because he absolutely deserved it. And as far as other guys go, like there's a lot of rotational guys, like, you know, like Juju had the 1-year stop,
yeah.
for a ring. MVS,
Honey Badger,
Chiefs, got 2 rings. Yeah, Honey Badger. Like Tyrann Mathieu was, I would go as far as to say, like, Tyrann Mathieu was the catalyst of their on the defensive side of the ball of their first Super Bowl with Mahomes. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. Chris Jones is the most important player, but what Tyrann Mathieu did that season was tremendous. Like, he was incredible, and he was a game changer for them that year. But I do feel like he kind of gets lost in the mix, and also, like, he is like very vocal on social media. And so he would go at Chiefs fans a lot. And so I think people really didn't like that. And they got really annoyed with him by the end of it. So I think Tyrann Mathieu, I think, is a really good one. And the rest of it's just kind of like rotational guys. Like Colin Saunders is,
right.
They've got 2 rings with the Chiefs and now he's in New Orleans.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between, you know, being a Teddy Bruschi who's a part of it all, you know what I mean? And seen as like a face or like a Julian Edelman and, yeah. and like a Darrell Revis even, who's just like a mercenary that has won and is a part of it or whatever. So, okay, cool. That was my question.
The Chiefs have made it apparent that, but before they re-signed Chris Jones this offseason, it was Mahomes and Kelsey only guys that like definitively we are going to have them every single year. And now Chris Jones is a part of that club after they decided to extend him again.
Good for him. Okay, we talked about the rules changes and how we were going to bring them up. The big ones are the kickoff, and that's kind of it. I mean, in terms of like big game-changing ones, I don't know if there's anything else you're passionate about that we can add to the list here.
We can talk about the kickoff. I think like the penalty review stuff is, I think it's only
stuff,
like one.
Yeah,
yeah. Like I think that matters, so we can get into that too. But the kickoff, like, I haven't talked to you about this. I think it's good for the game. I think kick return touchdowns are one of the most exciting things in football. Like if you're at a live football game, like one of the coolest things you can see is a special teams touchdown. Like mm-hmm. it's just so much fun. And the fact that they had basically taken that out of the game really sucks. So I'm in favor of it. I don't think onside kicks matter that much. Like anybody who's like, well, it totally eliminates the onside kick, whatever, they hardly ever succeed anyways. There's like 2 onside kicks in NFL history that anybody can point to and say like, oh, I remember that onside kick,
and one of them was literally in the Super Bowl, and that's the only yeah. reason why I would offer. I mean, the surprise onside kick is at least what is like completely gone away, like the yeah. onside kick somewhat exists, but the only other one that ever comes to mind for me, and I don't know if you remember, it was now 4 years ago, the Cowboys were trailing the Falcons and were like storming this furious comeback. And Greg Zuerlein did what they called the watermelon kick. Do you remember this? Like he placed it down and just kind of kicked it and it rotated. Do you remember this? It was weird. So like he played and nobody had ever really seen that kick. I mean, like, you know, like the special teams, like, you know, nerds that had like studied, you know, this existed. Like it wasn't like the Cowboys invented it, but it was a John Fossil thing. And so they placed the ball down sideways and he almost like putted it. So he kind of kicked it on the side and it just rotated. But it was traveling the whole way. And all the Falcons were just waiting for it to cross 10 yards. But because it moved so slowly, it allowed the Cowboys to get up there. And the moment it did, Dallas was able to jump on it and they were able to obviously recover and go on to win the game. And it was this big deal. But to your point, like that only sticks out because of the unique nature of it. It wasn't like your stereotypical, like bouncing all over the place onside kick or whatever. I'm in favor of the kickoff. Like, I feel like this is one of those things where like everybody wins. Like it's safer for the players. It's more exciting for us. It adds meaning to the plays. It adds strategy to the coaching. Like the only real loss, like the only negative, I think is the classic like gunner dudes on your team that you know make the roster because they're willing to go, you know, through the physical traffic that is the stereotypical kickoff. But if your goal and your want and your wish is for the teams to be constructed as best as possible, this helps that because now you have the most valuable players who can help you in every way, shape, and form.
Yeah, and I'm in favor of for onside kicks, like you're talking about, like with the Cowboys, like get more creative with it. Like now you have to announce it. You can only do it at certain parts of the game or whatever. You have to announce it when you're going to do it. So let's see these special teams coaches try to find a way to actually make it a thing that you can succeed at doing. Like, let's get more creative. We've made it this far into football and nobody's really done that much with an onside kick. Like, I don't think it's that big a part of the game, but like I would like to see teams put a little bit more effort into trying to make something happen there.
Well, and I would like to see more energy in the special team side of the game, because it feels like some teams just treat it casually. Like, how many special teams coordinators can you name off the top of your head?
Dave Tobe.
So like, I mean, you can't name a lot. Like, I would argue, you know, well, John Fossil is a pretty famous one, but some of that is that he was, you know, the interim coach for the Rams when Jeff Fisher was fired. So like he had that little, you know, kind of, and he's kind of, he's on the Cowboys now. And did you watch the Cowboys Hard Knocks?
No.
He talked about like getting a vasectomy and stuff. So like he's kind of like a funny dude, you know what I mean? So, but like my point is like, he has a really, you know, out there personality, which is one of the only reasons that people know him. And the only other one that I can name historically that like at least jumps to mind is John Harbaugh, because he was a special teams coordinator, and he was the Eagles special teams coordinator before he got the Ravens job. And that was like a big deal. It was like, oh wow, a special teams coordinator got a head coaching job. And it's like, it shouldn't be a big deal. Like it should be just as valuable as an offensive or defensive coordinator. And I do think that this leads to advancements and evolution in the coaching side of things, which is what we all want to see.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and for just the Chiefs, and obviously because like I'm really familiar with Dave Tobe, who has been a successful special teams coordinator for a really long time in the NFL. Like there is like he's the Dave Tobe is the Chiefs like assistant head coach. Like he has like open communication with Andy Reid and like has influence over roster decisions and things like that, because he's got certain types of guys that he wants on his special teams unit. And so like he's got influence. And even at one point, like Dave Tobe was a guy that was like being talked about as like a head coaching candidate, but that disappeared and hasn't been brought up ever again.
Well, actually I just got an alert right now as we're talking about rules. I promise this is relevant. and now I'm buying time so that the app can properly load. Shout out to our friends at Bleacher Report. Their app is great, but right now it's moving a little bit slow. So I don't know if you saw this. The NFL, Steven, is expanding replay assist. So replay assist will now include intentional grounding, roughing the passer, and late hit out of bounds penalties. That's a good thing, too. Like, you should have New York or whoever able to help you on those things. Like, intentional grounding is it's a penalty where you need the context of the entire field. And not like if you're an official on the field, like you can't see it all. You know what I'm saying? Like your depth perception may not be proper to be able to evaluate. Roughing the passer, making that assistable is, I think, a nightmare, which is probably how we feel about the hip drop thing, too. Hitting or out of bounds penalties is as well, because you have no idea what a player's understanding of is relative to depth perception. But I guess I worry with all this, and this includes the hip drop thing. I say worry, but like I don't have anything else to do. These games are going to be even longer. You know what I mean? Like with all this like replay assistance and everything like that, like an NFL game is going to be 4 hours before we know it.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest concern with all of this stuff. Because like, remember when basketball started adding all the replay review and how it slowed everything down like dramatically? Because I think like there is something too. Like if you're late in the fourth quarter of a game, you're trying to drive it and go win the football game, and like all of a sudden you got to take a 10-minute timeout so they can review stuff. Like I think that is a problem, but it's I think long term it helps the game of football, because all this stuff should have been reviewable anyways. Like all this stuff should have been something that they could go look at and say, no, we made the wrong call. But for some reason, like, I don't know if it's like because of the ref union or like the NFL just not wanting to admit that there's human error that heavily influences the game. But like, this is the way that it always should have been. And the hip drop stuff, like, I think that's tough. And I think that's going to be bad for the game next season. Like, I think there's going to be multiple instances where that winds up being a hugely impactful call based off of this new rule. And it's going to wind up like changing the outcomes of games possibly.
Well, it's going to be similar to like what roughing the passer has become, you know what I'm saying? Like how sensitive they are with it. Like what was it 2 years ago when the Chiefs played the Raiders on Monday Night Football? And they just caught these like horrible penalties to where like the internet was like completely team Chiefs. And it literally felt like the referees, this was my third party impartial perspective. It literally felt like the referees became like scared of the Arrowhead crowd. And they were almost like they went too far with these like makeup calls. And it felt like they were trying to acquiesce to the Kansas City residents.
So it was, I think it was Carl Cheffer's, and it was against the Raiders, because they're the specific play that like set Arrowhead.
It was the Crosby Mahomes thing. No, or was it the Chris Jones thing?
So Chris Jones sacks Derek Carr and also forced a fumble and recovered the fumble himself.
Right.
And they threw a flag on it. And like, and when you go back and watch it, it was a total bogus penalty, because it wasn't even like, you know, they say like you can't drop your weight on the quarterback or whatever. Chris Jones, like you could see Chris Jones brace himself to not fall on Derek Carr, pick up the football with the other hand. Like it was just an incredible play from an absurdly athletic 300-pound man. And they overturned it because of a penalty. And then the crowd got like aggressive and like violent. That the next time he had to kick the mic on, his voice was like trembling. Like he was like shaky and terrified.
Was this the Kelce 4-touchdown night? Am I remembering all this correctly?
That might be the case. Yeah. I think it was the game where he had like 4 catches for 15 yards, but they were like all touchdowns.
And I believe if it was 2 years ago, then that tracks. That was that game was profiled on the quarterback series with Mahomes and Max Crosby, and like that was when he was like kind of going back and forth with him. But that was a good time. I vividly recall feeling like, yeah, this is like they are like worried for themselves. And that was also, again, was that not the Davante Adams shoving the cameraman night? Am I remembering all this correctly now?
I think so. Yeah.
Wow.
I think
what an inflection point. Well, yeah. I mean, back to the origin of this. And we thought we were going to have trouble filling up 30 minutes. The hip drop thing. I don't think anybody is against. I hope nobody is against eliminating something that is unsafe. No, nobody is like, oh man, I wish they would keep that super dangerous thing in that hurts players. Nobody wants that. It's, I think we're all so nervous at the human error involved here, because a lot of like quote unquote hip drop tackles look like normal tackles, or vice versa. And this is just going to lead to like instances like that, like fraudulent, improper penalties, whatever. And I know they've said that it's going to be more of a fining situation, but like that sucks that some player is going to lose all this money because the NFL doesn't like, they, I know this is a trope at this point, but like they can't even inconclusively say what a catch is. So like, how are they going to be able to say this was a hip drop, this was not a hip drop, and players are going to be penalized as a result of it all?
Yeah. Did the NFL ever say what they do with this fine money? Because it just feels like they're just stealing money back from the players at this point.
They never have, as far as I'm aware. But on the subject of money, I'm glad you sort of segued. We didn't put this on the rundown, so be prepared. It was reported at the, you know, kind of culmination of the owners' meetings that the NFL was like, remember how we said we didn't want to play on Christmas anymore? Yeah, bump that. We are totally going to play on Christmas no matter what. And I saw Albert Breer he put it this way. He said, this would seem to suggest that the NFL is going to make playing on Christmas an annual tradition, because Wednesday would be, I think you, I'm not obviously disagree with the idea, but I think you agree with this, that Wednesday is the most difficult day to pull it off, right? Like you can make, you obviously can make Thursday, even Friday, but Saturday, Sunday, Monday games, those are really normal. But like, if you're willing to do it on a Wednesday, then it's clearly going to happen no matter what day of the week it falls on. And so we got a little bit more reports after the initial one, and everybody was equally outraged and equally pissed off. Because have the Chiefs played on Christmas since you've been working here?
Yeah, they played last year on Christmas.
Okay. That's right. It sucks. Like BLG, and this came out right before we recorded the mixtape, and he noted, and I obviously know this, the Cowboys play on Thanksgiving every year. And it's kind of a part of my life at this point. You know what I mean? Like even apart from work, it's just always been a part of my life, right? Because they always play on Thanksgiving. So, but you can kind of bake it in because you know the Cowboys are going to play. You have no idea who's going to. So I guess it's going to be two games this year. And what feels even more gross about it, and I'm just curious for your overarching thoughts, is that the NFL is sort of like opening up them up for auction for as far as like broadcasters are concerned. So they are literally trying to make as much money as possible on Christmas Day games, which is just kind of icky.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I know that it sounds like us like being like, oh, we just don't want to work on a holiday. Like the players don't want to work on a holiday like that. Like Thanksgiving is, you know, it's an NFL tradition. So like you said, like the Cowboys, you know, the Cowboys and the Lions are going to be playing on Thanksgiving. Like that's just NFL tradition. Every year you can bank on that. But like the Chiefs last year when they played the Raiders, it was a stretch of the season where they were really struggling. They went into that Christmas Day game and they were not interested in being there that day at all or playing a football game.
And they got Antonio Pierce a job. That's what they did.
Yeah, it was one of the worst Chiefs performances with Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback that I've ever seen. Like Patrick Mahomes turned the football over. Like they had two turnovers that went for touchdowns. Like they were just in no way interested in playing that football game on that day. And it was a waste of everybody's time because it's like that. Then you factor in like, oh, they're going to play Saturday if they have to play on Wednesday the following week. Like, how does that make sense? Because you claim that you're making all these improvements about player safety and you want to keep the players on the field and stuff. But that short turnaround, like there's been all kinds of things done about the Thursday night game and that turnaround off of a short week. And like the product is significantly worse. Like we know that. Like there's just not very many good Thursday games because they're tired and they're banged up and they're beat up and you're not giving them enough time to rest and recover.
I think that even I can't speak to it as well with the Lions, but even the Cowboys who. And obviously rosters change every year, but there's obviously a lot of players who are on the roster year to year. So like your Dak Prescott's or Zach Martin's or CeeDee Lamb's who know obviously that they play on Thanksgiving every year. Even it's so like, again, it doesn't make it easy, but like it is at the very least predictable, right? Like, you know, it's coming and it is still difficult and it's really challenging. You brought up playing the Saturday the week before. That's how the NFL is spinning that for this year, is that in an effort to give them enough time to prepare So Christmas is what, like week 14, let's call it week 14 ish. So the teams in question, the four teams, because there will be two Christmas Day games. The four teams in question, theoretically, will play on Saturday in week 13. So now you've shortened 2 weeks for them. And these four teams are all, in all likelihood, and I think you agree, probably going to have to play a Thursday night game at some other point earlier in the season. So they'll have had the short week for Thursday night football. They'll have had a shortened week, obviously, for what will be Saturday football. By the way, the NFL also created a new Saturday day game in what is our hypothetical week 13 with these four teams that are going to be playing on Thanksgiving or whatever. On Christmas. And now you have the shortened week that is the Christmas Day game, which is crazy. It's ridiculous. And unlike the Cowboys, again, I don't know what Thanksgiving would feel like without the Cowboys. So I feel weird complaining about it because it's just my life. But at the very least, I know that. You know what I mean? Like, my whole family knows that. My wife is really supportive of that. And so, like, we can kind of structure our life and how we plan our holiday around that. Somebody's going to find out in a month that their Christmas is completely and totally turned upside down. And the same thing's going to happen the following year. Like, the fact that there's no predictability to it makes it really volatile.
Obviously, like, Chiefs issues because they're top of the NFL. But last season, their schedule sucked. Like, it was awful. They had one noon game all year.
They wound up
having a second one later in the season because they were playing the Patriots, and the Patriots were awful. And see, so, like, they got bumped back to noon. But
we complain about that, us. But I think for the consumer, that's better. Like, I think if you're a fan, it's better to, like, it's probably awesome to not, because, like, watching a noon game stinks. You can't make a bunch of, like, food and stuff ahead of a noon game. You know what I mean? Like, the way you can for the afternoon or a night game.
But for the team and the players, like, it sucked because obviously the Chiefs are big business right now. So it's like they just had primetime game after primetime game after primetime game. And, like, all of that stuff, like, I just feel like, and then you factor in, like, oh, now you have to play every Christmas too. Cause, like, I'm just expecting the Chiefs to be on Christmas Day because they're the Chiefs and the NFL wants to put them front and center.
I would disagree with you because, so we had an article that went out from one of our writers, Matthew Holler, and he does a great job. And he does this every year where he predicts the schedule. And I used to do that and it was a lot of fun. But anytime we would kind of talk about that, at the end of a season, which is like forever for you, nowadays, you can kick rocks, but, we release the opponents that the Cowboys or the Chiefs or whoever have for the following year. And so it's like a lot of people either in that moment or when, like, I don't know, Derrick Henry signs with the Ravens, the Cowboys by the Ravens. I think that's in, at AT&T Stadium this year. A lot of people be like, oh, that's definitely the Thanksgiving Day game. And my retort to that is always, you don't need it to be like the NFL is never going to, like, say the Chiefs were to visit the Cowboys, which Chiefs last visited Dallas in 2017. So say, you know, in 2025,
was that the Hail Mary game, like right before halftime?
The Hail Mary game. That's what the Cowboys won that game, to be clear. But that wasn't really, I was at that game. But anyway, like, you don't have to give America or the world Cowboys and the best possible opponent on Thanksgiving because everyone's going to watch anyway. Like, you know what I mean? You don't have to burn what it would otherwise be a great game that you can use a different week. And so to your, I guess against your point, I don't think it'll be the Chiefs. I think that'll be like a fringe team. Like, I bet the Texans are a Christmas Day game. You know what I mean? Like a team that kind of needs the bump that is good enough to work in that slot, but that people might not necessarily watch in an island game otherwise. Like, I'd put the Texans there, maybe the Falcons, obviously, now with Kirk. After that, I'm starting to struggle a little bit, but maybe the Giants or Commanders now, you know what I mean? Like, those are the kinds of teams I think that are going to be there. I think you're probably safe.
Yeah, and I will say last year, the Chiefs had the early game on Christmas, so it was like we could at least get it out of the
golly,
way.
Golly, chill out a little bit, see? Although that would suck though for like people with kids and stuff that like want, because the game's at noon, so you got to get up and do your whole Christmas thing. You know what I mean? Like, that sucks. And if it's not a every year thing, whatever, but like it does suck. And it's okay to say that.
Yeah, I just think we should stop. Like, that somebody needs to put an end to this. Like, you're stealing Christmas away from all of these people.
I'm going to ask you this question, ask you to answer it at the risk of the NFL hearing you. But so the NFL already has Thanksgiving and now Christmas, seemingly, which I guess they're, this is their, you know, sort of pseudo way of saying they're going to do this every year. They have Black Friday now. What is left? Like, what is the day that, that is, that we kind of have as a society that they will steal at some point in the future?
Taco Tuesdays.
Oops. How often do you get tacos on Tuesdays?
Not that often, really.
Yeah, I don't do it that often. I used to go to this place, Rosa's. You ever been to a Rosa's? Well, you just ruined that conversation. But the answer that I was looking for or fishing for was Halloween. That's the only kind of like regular fall holiday. But, you know, because that sucks, too, when it falls on a Sunday and people want to go trick-or-treating or whatever, but there's Sunday Night Football on. So,
yeah,
you know. Hey.
Yeah, we need, the players need breaks. The coaches need breaks. We need breaks. Like, then we don't have to have football 7 days a week.
Do we want to talk about anything else, or do we want to just end with, hey, we want less football on a podcast all about football?
I think I pretty much covered everything that I had today. I'm going to go see the new Kong and Godzilla this weekend. I'm excited about that.
I'm really happy for you. I don't know what I'm going to watch this weekend. I'm still behind on a million different things. I started watching The Crown. I told you this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only one episode in. So
you should watch X-Men 97. It's short and it's awesome.
I have a question here, and maybe this is a good note to end on. What is X-Men 97? So I've seen a lot of tweets about this, and this is my base level understanding. The old X-Men cartoons, which were and remain amazing, those are accessible on Disney Plus. So as I understand, this is somewhat related. I don't know if it's tangentially related or like a remake or what this is. Please explain.
So this is just, it's like an extension of the original X-Men animated series that a lot of people, especially like in our age demographic, watched as children. Okay. And so this picks up like where the original animated series ended.
Wow.
And so it's like new X-Men stories, but with the same people and characters from the original animated series. And it's tremendous. The first three episodes are out and it's amazing.
Is it called 97 because the last show ended in 97, or is there another?
I think it was like 96 or 97. I think it was like 96 when the original like airing ended, so it's 97 to follow that.
How many seasons of the original are there? Because I don't remember them like off the top of my head very well.
I think there's like three or four. There's not that many, because like, because the way it worked back then, like, you know, it just, when it came on TV, you just watched it.
Yeah,
you didn't really have any concept of like episodes and seasons.
There was no chronological understanding of television if you were a kid of the 90s. Anything like any kind of cartoon or sitcom. It was just what's on at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. You turn it on, even if it's mid episode, you're just like, sweet, X-Men's on.
Okay. So then that's two more things and then we'll leave. They're both questions to rank, if you don't mind. Let's go top. Top five might be tough, but we're going to do it anyway. Your top five X-Men movies, your films. By the way, I'm pledging to at some point rewatch the original cartoon so I can enjoy 97 properly. But so your top five X-Men movies in ascending order. So 5 through 1.
Okay.
Maybe top three. Three is probably easier.
Okay. So three, I'm going to go with The Wolverine, which I think was a really underrated X-Men movie edition that I feel like people didn't really see and wasn't really as popular as it should have been. And I thought it was like one of the better X-Men movies.
The one where he went to Japan or whatever?
Yeah, I love that movie. I thought that was an awesome, just because it was way better than like Origins of Wolverine. Like that movie was garbage.
Okay.
But The Wolverine was awesome. So I'm going to go with that. And then I will go with Days of Future Past. That's my number three.
Okay.
I really enjoyed that one. And number one's got to be Logan, because it's just the best X-Men movie.
I've actually never seen Logan. It doesn't make my top three. But so for mine are really like the team X-Men films. You have two, Wolverine specific. So Days of Future Past is incredible. Number three. For me, number two is the original X-Men. Just some of that's nostalgic because it was so cool how they went to the Statue of Liberty. You know what I mean? Like it was just like a, yeah. It has some like Air Force One vibes, some like Con Air vibes to it. So
I've rewatched that recently. And like when you rewatch it, like you get back into like when it came out, like it was such a big deal.
Oh, it was. I mean, people think that Spider-Man was the first like superhero movie yeah. of our time. It was X-Men. So that's number two for me. And therefore, number one has to be the best X-Men movie, which I can't believe was left off your list. X2. That movie rocks. That movie remains incredible. The opening scene at the White House was awesome.
Yeah. So that would have been, if we would have kept it at five, X2 would have been in there for okay. sure. And it is like of the original ones, it's easily the best one. Like it is tremendous. And Brian Cox is fantastic in that movie.
We don't have to discuss, The Last Stand. We'll just let that kind of live on its own. Okay. You don't have to rank these, but if you could have any three different X-Men's powers, their mutations, whose would you want?
I'm going to go with Wolverine's just healing ability.
You don't want the skeleton made of adamantium. Okay.
No, I feel like they're separate things. Like if you could just get the healing powers, I feel like that would be great. Jean, obviously, is one of the most powerful X-Men, and Storm would be awesome too. Just be able to control weather. I can't hear you. You're muted for some reason.
Storms wouldn't be helpful. Like what would you do with storms powers? Like on a daily basis? Like I could totally understand the others.
I would make it nice outside so I can do things outside.
I mean, I suppose I vividly remember like learning as a child that Storm didn't actually fly and that she floated on the wind that she controlled. And I remember thinking like, that is so lame. It was so much cooler when I thought she flew. So I'm going to go with, Jean Grey. Obviously you can't like not have her involved. I'm going to go with Nightcrawler, I don't want the tail and all that. You know what I mean? I just want
you don't want to be blue.
Exactly. Like I just want the ability. And a little bit of a twist here. I'm going to go with Magneto. That would be really, really functional. Yeah. And really useful. You know what I mean?
Mystique probably should have been in mine too. I feel like
What would you conceivably use that for in your day-to-day life right now?
I just feel like you could find ways to use it to your advantage in some way.
A Zoom call or a StreamYard recording with you would be very weird if you were Mystique. Okay, let's leave. And as we do, Steven's gonna hum the X-Men theme song.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.